The following is an audio recording of the impact of the word eternity. Collectively, these recordings form an audio history.
My name is Ignatius Jones. I was the artistic director of Spectac Productions, and as such, I was the artistic director of Sydney New Year's Eve from 1996 until 2002, which means that one of my productions was the Millennium Celebrations, where we put Eternity on the Harbour Bridge. I first came across Eternity, like any good artistic teenager in the 1970s, through the work of Martin Sharp, who had created the most beautiful series of prints, I think they were. I think there were a few paintings as well, based on the Eternity concept. At that stage, I hadn't heard of Arthur Stace, but later on I did, long before, you know, I knew anything about Sydney New Year's Eve or Millennium or anything, but the whole story of Arthur Stace was so inspiring that it added yet another layer to the Eternity story. And friends of mine, I think when I turned 21, had given me a pair of matched Eternity prints, framed and everything, and they followed me around for the rest of my life. And I had them up in my office, where people would comment on them, and I'd had to explain the story, because by that stage, you know, a lot of the younger people had forgotten the significance of Eternity. Someone had made a documentary about Arthur Stace, which I had, you know, in my bookcase. And then in the late 90s, we started to, as part of New Year's Eve, so everybody would ask, well, what does this Eternity thing mean? What's it about? And of course, I'd tell the story of Arthur Stace him, you know, putting Eternity all over the footpaths in perfect copper plate script, yellow chalk, during the 60s. And as you do, one stage, we had a young work experience lad in who was absolutely fascinated about the Eternity symbol and what it meant. And I said, well, if you're that interested here, have a look at this video. It tells the whole story of Arthur Stace, etc. He took it away and watched it at home and only became more and more excited about it. Now, at that time, we just started, this would have been 1997, we just started to put things on the bridge to light them up during the finale of the fireworks. Our designer, Peter England, had been sitting on the point of the opera house looking at the bridge and may have been aided by certain substances. And into his mind there came this whole idea of putting stuff on the bridge, which was great. We used to get together every Friday at about, 5:30 in the office and crack a few bottles of wine and have wine o'clock. And often we'd get our best ideas during wine o'clock. And this wine o'clock it was 1998 actually, and we were trying to figure out what we were going to do, what we were going to put on the bridge for 98, and this young work experience kid just went, I know, you should put Eternity up there. And it was like, hold that thought. Because it was just the perfect thing to do, but it was too good to do in 98. So, I put it on the shelf and kept it for 99-2000 for the Millennium Celebrations. And in the build-up to those, I'd gotten a picture of the bridge and photoshopped Eternity onto it and gave it to Peter and said, mate, make this work. And not only did he make it work, but I'd asked him, can we write it on? Can we write it on so it looks like Arthur Stace's invisible hand is writing that thing on? And he went, yeah. And basically the word was in sections and we faded each section up. So, you know, the E would have had five sections and we faded them up in sequence. And it did look fantastic. There was, you know, the usual, how would I say, artistic friction about, you know, something so big. And it is really, really big. If you, you know, if you have a look at the films they took on the night, you know, you're looking at it and, you know, what is that little thing? That tiny millipede down there, it's actually a train. The trains never go off. They haven't got any people in them, but they never go off when the crackers are on the bridge. anyway, it was big. And Pete figured out how to make it work. And then come millennium, well, the story was, and as I say, there was a lot of friction as to whether or not it was going to be effective and would anyone remember it. And I was of the opinion it made no difference. And in fact, I hope they didn't remember it and it had the chance to do its magic all over again, you know, for the people who had no idea what it was and never heard of Arthur Stace. And I have to say that Frank Sartor stood up for it. And in fact, in his way, he gave me a little call and said, mate, is it going to work? And I said, yes, Frank. Trust me, I'm a director. On the night, sure enough, we get to the great moment. And it was meant to happen right at the end of the fireworks on the bridge. As the smoke cleared, eternity would write itself ever so elegantly on the bridge. And you would hear all the bells in all the churches in the CBD would ring, you know, to ring in the new millennium, et cetera, et cetera. I actually, you know, with my team spent weeks going around to all the churches asking them to ring their bells at, you know, we gave them the time and said we all synchronized our watches so they knew when it was going to happen. And on the night, I was standing with Rick Birch's partner at the time on the tip of the Opera House watching the whole thing happen. And the fireworks went off and they were particularly spectacular. And the company, the fireworks company that was doing the bridge that year, had just lost the job to another company. And there's huge rivalry between fireworks companies. You should never work with more than one at a time, but politically we had to. Company A had lost to Company B, and this was Company A's last year. So they decided to put everything they had on the bridge and not tell us. So music finishes, bells start ringing. I've got the walkie-talkie and I say, shoot eternity now. And the fireworks kept on going. There's a whole new sequence happened on the bridge, and it consisted of what we call a sequential. When I go across the arc, there was two of those, and then another wall of comets, and there was a waterfall, a Niagara. And Niagara's make so much smoke. Anyway. I was standing there and eternity is writing itself and I can't see it because there's so much smoke. So I just grabbed the walkie-talkie and I said, turn it off. turn it off. And the poor guy in the control room went, turn it off. I said, yes, turn it off. So he did. And we just waited till the smoke had blown away in the wind. They went, now go. And sure enough, it went on again and wrote itself on like it was meant to. So we really got 1.5 eternities that night. And it did what it was meant to do, the bells ringing. And a number of people have told me, you know, when I saw eternity, I thought I heard bells ringing. it was one of those wonderful moments in major events which could have gone both ways, but fortunately, it did as it was meant to. The way I saw it was, sure enough, yes, it was the millennium celebrations, and we were celebrating, you know, 1,000 years of what? You know, humanity's short span on Earth as a civilization here on this city on a far-off shore of a tiny planet in an infinitesimal galaxy, you know, in the middle of billions and billions of years of existence. And I think that's one of the things that Arthur Stace wanted you to think of is, you know, who are we? We tiny little ants, you know, on crawling on the planet's face. I just love the idea of taking something that had been scribbled on a sidewalk and putting it on the Harbour Bridge, you know, creating the largest light sculpture really that's ever been attempted, getting it to work 1.5 times. We even got the colour of, we matched it to the yellow chalk that Arthur Stace had used. And it really, it must have spoken to so many people, because there are so many people who've spoken to me about it since who had no idea about Arthur Stace and about, you know, why eternity was there. And it got them thinking, you know, which is exactly what it was all about. Just one moment in all this mad partying when they would stop and think. Even if they didn't, you know, happen to do that until the next day or the next week, it would be something that remained in their memory, and it did.
So the tension was, would people remember the eternity story or would they remember the event? What was that conversation with Frank about?
Frank was worried that people wouldn't know what it was about, or that the word itself would not resonate. I don't think, I never thought that was going to be a problem. The fact that there was the Arthur Stace story behind it was just a bonus. It would have been fabulous whether or not Arthur had, you know, made it part of the Sydney legend, but he did, and that was it. It was part of the Sydney legend, and I remember seeing, you know, 2 days later in Time magazine, even though the front cover was the ball dropping in New York, for whatever reason they do that. But when you opened the magazine to the actual story, it was a full double page, full bleed of the Harbour Bridge with eternity on it. And, you know, suddenly it was almost like Sydney had arrived in many ways. And we got two shots at it, you know, that and the Olympics. And interestingly enough, they used it in the opening ceremony of the Olympics. It had become in 3 months, it had become an iconic moment for Sydney. So it really must have spoken to a lot of people. And no one questioned it when we used it at the Olympics. You know, everyone said, oh, yeah, Eternity, yeah, fine. You know, and it was the finale, again, of the opening ceremony cultural segment. Yeah, they no one questioned it then. They all took it for granted that this was, you know, that this said Sydney.
How did that make you feel? You weren't part of that, the Olympics bit, but they had recognised, or you had recognised the light horsemen, all of Australia, well, not all, but a lot of Australia's history was recognised. And then something that happened just 9 months prior was put in the same category as something that happened billions of years ago on this in this country. How did that make you feel?
It was a wonderful moment. I knew it was going to happen. The opening ceremony had 9 directors, you know, and we all worked together. It was one of the very few times that's ever happened in Australia. And we all worked together on this. And the other directors knew very well who'd worked to get Eternity up on the bridge. So as part of that community, you know, I was quite young, you know, that was 20 years ago. And it was a great, it was a really, you know, great moment to be recognized in that way, and to know that I'd actually, you know, as a new Australian, you know, as an immigrant to the country, had managed to touch on such a nerve, you know, especially since the other segment of the opening ceremony that I worked on was the lone horseman and the, you know, making the Olympic rings out of horses, you know, which was a great thing to give the young immigrant Banjo Patterson and, you know, the Australian national poem. So, you know, in many ways it justified my feeling that, you know, Australia would not so much a melting pot, but a tossed salad, in which we could all be ourselves and yet be part of the warp and woof of the country, you know, held together by the salad dressing of tolerance, and have a go, mate. And yeah, I was having a go.
Have people that perhaps you didn't expect come your way and comment on the Millennium Fireworks? Did you do that? What do people say to you when they realise that it was you who did it?
Oh, they're usually very complimentary, because they don't usually realise that it was me who did it. You know, it'll be a conversation like, oh, I really loved it when they put Eternity on the bridge. And you go, I did that. And they go, yeah, I did that. So it is still, when you consider it, gosh, it wasn't even LEDs. It was incandescent bulbs, you know, that we'd put into a giant tray to incandescent bulbs inside rope light. We'd put into a giant tray, which unfortunately got trashed afterwards, and a lot of people wanted it to stay. And a lot of people, you know, called Frank and wrote him letters and said, you know, you've got to leave it up there. It's just wonderful. And in many ways, you know, I kind of agree with them, because it seems to put a full stop on the bridge. You know, it seems, I mean, you look at it after, you know, about Eternity, you think something's missing. But of course, it had only been designed to be there for a couple of weeks. There was no way that it could stay there. And the bridge, of course, is not the kindest place to giant pieces of metal. You know, it would have rusted and been blown to bits in no time flat. But I still think there's a place in Australia somewhere that needs a giant Eternity sign.
The importance of Martin Sharp in the story. If not for Martin, what would it have meant anything to you?
I think it would have. I think the story of Arthur Stace was just so resonant that eventually, the same way Martin picks up on it, we would have picked up on it. The difference being was that Martin was, he's, you know, several decades older than me, and he was artistically alive when Arthur first did the original Eternity. I think he probably would have been in his late teens, you know, when that happened, which is when I discovered it in my late teens, 20 years later. So I think it would, someone else would have found it and brought it to the fore. But, you know, Martin was absolutely extraordinary in the things that he picked up on. He was, you know, like any great artist, it's about observation. It's about, you know, Barry Humphries often calls it finding those little bits of wool that stick to a civilization, the little burrs. I like to think that that's what I had done, was found that little burr sticking to the civilization and pulled it out and you know, expanded it again. And I wouldn't be surprised if someone else doesn't take Eternity and run with it. It's too wonderful a thing, you know, to lose. We had so many coming through the company, coming through the event. And on top of that, we had the NIDA secondments, and they all went on to, you know, bigger and better things. But this kid, he just got right into it, and he was amazed by everything. You know, one of the issues with work experience kids is often more work to have them than it isn't, because you've got to find things for them to do. In this case, Rick, it's great, had a collection of records, you know, of LPs, of Olympic music dating back to LA and before. And I said to the kid, oh, look, we had one of those record players you could digitize from. And I said, you know, can you digitize all these for me and write down the track listings? And he said, oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And he came into my office after about half an hour and he said, I don't know what to do. I've digitized the record, but on the cover, it's got twice as many songs. I mean, it's an LP, turn it over. No idea, having grown up with CDs. But I can't remember his name. It's just that he was incredibly enthusiastic and well, you know, you're always having ideas. And I'm not an idea Nazi. If someone has an idea and it's a good idea, whether they're the Lord Mayor or the work experience kid, it's in the show, you know, and we'll credit them if we know who they are. But, yeah, that's where that came from. And a lot of the best ideas do happen that way. I didn't have to. It already was, really. It was already an iconic moment. I think that's something that Arthur Stace himself had realized. You know, changed his life, but you know, and that it was picked up again by Martin Sharp, and through that, you know, changed other people's lives. I think was a very very meaningful thing, and I just think it's going to, you know, continue to do that as you know, people see the postcards, you know, of the night, and you know, see the various commemorative, you know, stuff on it. It's now part of Sydney's history. It always was, but it's something fantastic to take a bit of history and run with it, and then have you know, that gesture rewarded by having people recognize it as what it was. No, the church bells that you hear on the track are real church bells, and they're being picked up by the cameras, the microphones on the cameras. And I suppose, gosh, it harks back to my experience as a kid with fiestas in the Philippines and in Spain. They ring the bells, you know, on the day. And every time I'd hear the bells ring on a Sunday, which they do at all sorts of different hours, depending on your particular part of the Christian faith. The whole idea of having all the bells in the city ring, it was, you know, very much a sort of an 1812 moment. So we actually went and talked to all the various churches, and interestingly enough, when I got to St. Mary's, the person who was in charge of the bell ringing, I forget what the title is, but I'd met him before. He'd buried my father. he went, "Ignatius, remember me? I'm Father," probably Kelly. They're all called Father Kelly. He took me up to the belfry and introduced me to the bell ringers, and they played me a few of the top hits. You know, and there was 12 of them hanging on to these ropes. And they literally, as the bell went up, so did they. They would leave the ground and go up 3 feet and then come back down. And, you know, getting all the different denominations to ring their bells at the same time was a fabulous moment, because no matter where you were in the CBD, you heard them. And God, the bells of St. Mary's, that sounds like a nursery rhyme, they are very loud. So, you know, the eastern side of the harbour certainly rang. Well, you know, it's got ringing in the ear, and that's exactly what we did. It's something I wish they would do every year. I don't know, and you mentioned that it's got one of them has got eternity written in it. I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised if it did. We were trying to involve everyone in the city with the celebrations, you know, which is something that's so exciting. I mean, when we told the bell ringers that we wanted them to ring the bells after the fireworks had finished, and they were so thrilled. You know, when you think about it, you know, bell ringers are amongst the the forgotten people who make our lives work, and you know, for them to have their efforts you know, recognized and celebrated was a big moment. You just go, "Oh God, I got that one right." It's interesting. I've been very lucky in my life that I've had a few of those moments, like, you know, when the lone horseman galloped out at the Sydney Olympics, when we raised the giant Timorese flag at the independence ceremonies of East Timor. You know, there's been a number of those, lighting a few Olympic cauldrons down the line. You're so frightened that something's not going to not going to happen as it's meant to. And then it's interesting, you know, you get lifted up by the winds of fate, and they fix it, you know. And the number of times this has happened, but you know, it's one of those things that you get lucky to be put in that situation, and it's a really great thing because you're sharing it with a lot of people, you know, more so than if you're doing a play or even a movie, you know, because you can feel those people there, you know, with you, and you don't, in major events, there is no second night. You've got to get it right, you know, on the opening. And if it does go wrong, you've got to save it, you know. But I think out of, you know, all of those things that I've worked on, Eternity was one where you could feel that magic around the harbour, you know, and fortunately I was surrounded with people too at the opera house there, and a lot of people knew that it was there because we did have to test it. So even though we tested it every morning at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m., people still knew it was there. But I don't think they had any idea how effective it was going to be or how we were going to do it. And that's half of it, is, you know, the theatrical build-up for it and the bells, you know, the wouldn't have been the same without the bells. And as you say, you know, it really did deeply affect a lot of people, which it was meant to do. And that's such a wonderful thing for a theatrical practitioner when something that they do deeply affects the audience. You know, you as I say, you know you're on the right track.
Would you say it was the perfect knot?
It was. You know, as I said, we had to turn it off, you know, 1.5 times to get it to work properly, and we did have the wind issue earlier in the evening, but nobody knew. You know, if you don't tell them, it's all going to hell in a handbasket. It's like the cauldron, you know, at the Olympics. Nobody really knew that it had stopped. And fortunately, we actually ran out of music on that. When it started again, the orchestra started playing an extra piece of music that I'd found that they had for the fireworks. I was in charge of the fireworks for the opening and closing ceremonies. Fortunately, we had the music there, otherwise it would have gone up in silence. And so things like that happen. You try to put in the fallback to the fallback to the fallback. And if you fall over 4 times in a row, you know the gods are against you. But it worked, and it worked, you know, quite spectacularly. So we were very happy with that. There was a journalist in the Herald who, writing on the front page of the Herald, and he said, you know, Eternity is now the word of the millennium, which was a pretty fabulous thing. And Leo Schofield called me Mr. Eternity Jones, which was a lovely thing on his part. So it certainly struck a lot of chords, you know, with everyone, those who remembered it from its, you know, humble beginnings, and those who had just seen it that night for the first time. It certainly did you know, mean something to them.
And to you, did it mean anything to you?
Oh, a hell of a lot. You know, I was the one who'd God first seen it when I was 17. Had actually seen it at Martin's place and been obsessed with it for years, and you know, until I got those two posters, framed them, and you know, up they sort of followed me around. The fact that we managed to get it onto the bridge, you know, good on you, Frank, for believing in it, because you know he had to raise the dollars to get it up there, and it wasn't cheap, but it certainly taught Australia a lesson, I think. I'm being very commercial now, but there was an article in the Financial Review, the Australian Financial Review, the next year or that year, by a senior executive in what was then Singleton Ogilvie Mather, you know, a major advertising agency, who said he'd been in New York and turned the television on at 6 a.m. And, you know, at the end of the news, as they always do, the newsreader had said, "Happy New Year to you, and we'll leave you with some people who are already partying in Sydney, Australia." And boom, they showed a 30-second clip of the Sydney fireworks and Eternity. And this fellow wrote that he kept the television on for the rest of the day, and at the end of every news segment, they showed Sydney and Eternity. And he said, like, I had no idea the power of the visuals of major events and what they could achieve. And if I, as a senior advertising executive, had to cost that, I would have said that, you know, and it was editorial, it wasn't advertising, I would have said that, you know, it would have come up to $500,000, you know, $500 million, $500 million worth of advertising that, you know, we got relatively for free because we created something that was just so iconic. And, you know, it's remained iconic since then. You know, people have used it so many different ways, but it'll always be Eternity. And I think, you know, in a nation that has so few iconic symbols, it is one of our great ones. And I love the fact that, you know, it comes from the streets, and it comes from a city. It doesn't come from the great wide land, you know, of drenching floods and, you know, it is an Australian urban icon. And it's specifically a Sydney icon, you know, and that's a wonderful thing. We need more. We used to have a saying in the Olympic family, you're only as good as your last cauldron. It was hard to top Eternity, really was. And Frank kept hassling me to do it. He said, What are you going to do to top Eternity? I said, resign. it's hard. It's a really difficult one to top because, you know, where do you find an icon like that? And that's been prepared for you so carefully by people like, you know, Arthur Stace and that fabulous backstory, and then Martin Sharp. You know, it is a hard one. I'm sure we could do something that would have resonance with it. The other thing too that we had with Eternity was its sheer size. It's still the biggest bridge effect we've ever done. It's still the biggest light sculpture ever built. And if you want to measure it, look at the hangars on the bridge, the things that, that hold the roadway onto the arc, and count them. Eternity takes up six segments. No bridge effect has ever been that big since. You know, they've just gradually gotten smaller and smaller. And I think they're down to two segments. So it really did make it did make an impact. And it was up for a couple of weeks after that. So everyone got a, you know, really good chance to see it. Very proud making, you know, to know that you'd gotten that up there. But it wasn't, you know, just the work of one person. It really did take a major team to get it up there. They were the people who would go on to put on the Olympics, basically. I just took my team with me and then brought them back to do the closing ceremony on the harbour when we had the Olympic rings up there. And I'd have gone, mate, how about that? I wouldn't have offered him a drink. But I would have shook his hand. I think he must have been quite a special gentleman, you know, to have gone what he had gone through. And then, you know, towards the end of his life, suddenly have a massive epiphany that turned into a mission, you know, to write that word all over the sidewalks. And that's interesting, is that he wrote them on the sidewalks, not on the walls of buildings, but on the sidewalks. And there's just something that it speaks to his humility and faith. And not that I'm a religious person at all, but what's important there is the faith and the wonder, you know, that he had himself. And that's in many ways what we were trying to achieve, was that sense of wonder. And obviously it did strike some people like that, you know, which again is a very rare thing in the theatre, you know, to have something like that happen. And it was theatre. That's exactly what it was. And I think, you know, it was Sydney and Australia became quite famous for creating those moments of massive public theatre. And, you know, many of us have gone on from that to repeat that, you know, in the very few venues there are for it, you know, mainly giant stadiums and, you know, Olympic situations. You don't get that opportunity very often. And so you're thankful for it. And when you do get that opportunity, you really do try to get it right.
Did you know that the Harbour Bridge was opened in the same year that Arthur first wrote Eternity?
No. Really? In the 20s? No. I thought that he was writing Eternity towards the 60s, or did he just keep going?
He started in 1932, and that was the year the Harbour Bridge was opened. And he just went all the way throughout World War II, right up through the 50s and 60s until he died.
Wow.
So did you know that?
No. No, I thought Eternity was very much a 60s thing. Yeah. Oh, gosh. A long time since I've watched that documentary. There's a new one coming along. So, again, as I say, it's a great compliment to have been part of that. And, you know, I just hope that in my time, I've been able to have a few of those moments where, you know, we actually get to play with the script in people's minds, you know, and actually help write what their memories are going to be about. And this if anything, is a particularly special one, because it somehow manages to capture joy. You know, it's surrounded with fireworks and it's made of light, and yet it's quite profoundly spiritual at the same time. You know, you rarely get that lucky. Remo's Eternity was very much Martin's. It was a reproduction of Martin's Eternity, but, you know, anyone who has partaken of it has become part of that timeline. I mean, the Eternity we put on the bridge, Peter England and I, were very careful that it matched Arthur's. We weren't matching Martin's. Martin's was single line thick. Your sticker on the canvas, but it was, the whole thing was the same thickness, which is not copperplate. Copperplate is calligraphy, so the line changes in thickness as you write it. And we, as I said before, we copied his colour, so it was that sort of pale yellow, and we copied his Eternity very, very closely. And I think we got you know, pretty close to it, despite the fact that we were using rope light in a tin mold to achieve it. I mean, nowadays we would be sewing LEDs and it would be brighter, and you know, we could make it. In fact, the very year after, which was Federation, we put the rainbow serpent above the Federation star on the bridge. That's still when we were pretty big, and we. We ended up calling it the Las Vegas Disco Snake, because we could run colours through it, and you know, we managed to discover the glory of LEDs. But Eternity was very, very, very simple, almost stark, and that was part of its magic. You know, you ask people, "Do you remember the Las Vegas Disco Snake?" You know, they go, "No." But they remember Eternity, you know, so it obviously had something that nothing else has had before or since. It was magic. That's when we started to get the letters saying, "Let it stay there." And it really did work. It did work well there. You know, there's not a lot of public art in Australia, you know, and you look around the world, see things like the Statue of Liberty. You know, it is a major work of public art, and it kind of stands for New York. I think Eternity on the Bridge could be one of those major pieces of public art that could stand for Sydney. I mean, admittedly, we've got the Opera House, which is a major piece of public art, but you've got to go to the Opera House, and you've got to go in it, and a lot of people are intimidated by it. You know, when we did the first few vivids and brought contemporary music to the Opera House, 60% of the people who attended had never seen anything in the Opera House before. So there is a feeling of elitism about that building. But not about the bridge. You know, that's why whenever people are given the opportunity to walk across it, on the roadway, it just goes off, which it had just before we put Eternity up there for the reconciliation walk across it. There's something that the people of Sydney really do. They feel the bridge is theirs, you know. They go across it every day. And you know, to hear that Arthur had started scrawling Eternity the year the bridge opens seems to make it that more appropriate.
I bet you he scrawled Eternity on the Bridge a couple of times too. I would have loved, I think there is a film of him writing it. I think we even referred to that when we wrote it up there. I don't know if there's footage of it writing itself on, but that was the idea. Still, it worked, and it as you say, hung there for the next at least 3 or 4 weeks, could be a couple of months.
Subscribe below to find out more about the audio recordings and to be kept up to date when more are made available.